This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the TriDot Podcast. Did you know that when you race, whether it's a triathlon or a run-only event or whatever else strikes your fancy that you add to the race calendar, you can race for a cause that is bigger than yourself? We're going to talk about this today with two brand new guests for the TriDot Podcast. Our first guest is Audra Tassone in Deck. She has worked for the Ironman Group since 2009 and is the executive director for the Ironman Foundation. Our second guest is TriDot Ambassador Tammy Dotson. Tammy is the CEO of Time to Shine in Consulting Services and is a very enthusiastic TriDot Ambassador who often raises money for a variety of causes when she heads to the races. Audra, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And Tammy, it's good to see you again. How are you doing?
I am wonderful, Andrew. Thank you for having me.
Well, I am Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wind things down with our cool down.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Part of going through the motions of a big-time race is doing a little shopping. Visiting the race expo to see what vendors are there and what you can buy is all part of the race weekend fun. So Audra, Tammy, as our podcast warm-up question today, what is your favorite item that you've purchased in Ironman Village or at just any other race expo? Tammy, what is this answer for you?
I have to say it's the Normatec boots.
Oh, so you splurged.
I held out as long as I could, but they got me. They got me.
Well, and they get you with sales, right? Because you're like, I'm not going to pay 100% full price. And then you go to the races and suddenly there's like a 10% discount if you buy it on site at the races. And all of a sudden you find yourself at home with your feet propped up in some Normatec boots. Which race expo, Tammy, did you buy your Normatec boots at?
I actually finally bought them at Boston Marathon.
Audra, of all the races you've been to, and you work for Ironman, so I don't know if you're a sucker for the Ironman gear or not. Maybe you get it by default. But what is your favorite thing you've ever bought at an Ironman or any race expo?
I'll purchase something from Hoka last time. It was like a 3/4 length sweatshirt. And then as I went to go pay, the Lululemon section always gets me. And I always grab the socks that always come in the bright colors. So every time that I'm at the merchandise store.
Yeah. And I'm kind of like you. I get to go to the races a lot for TriDot. And so like the thing I'll let myself buy when I'm at a race, but not racing, is one of the race hats. Because to me that says like, oh, I was there, but it doesn't say like I raced, right? I'm not trying to claim to be an athlete like in the Kona field, but I bought a Kona hat because I was there and I deserve it. So I'm kind of similar in that way. I'm actually wearing one of the Ironman Lululemon long sleeves right now. I asked for this for Christmas and I got it. Thank you, Mom. This answer for me, when it comes to the race expo, I think my favorite shopping spree so far, I won't shout out an individual item, but I, for a long time, held off on actually buying anything with like the M-Dot logo on it. I would buy things like if I did a half Ironman, I'd buy the half Ironman race t-shirt, but like I didn't want to buy something that implied that I might be an Ironman until I finished a full distance Ironman. And so when I went and did Ironman Waco, longtime listeners of the podcast will know that was my first Ironman. I went into Ironman Village and I went into the shopping tent and I let myself buy whatever the heck I wanted to that had an M-Dot logo, because finally I was getting some branding that represented the fact that I was about to be a full distance Ironman properly for the first time. So that's this answer for me. We're going to throw this question out on Facebook like we always do. We put this question out on Facebook to the I Am TriDot Facebook group, and we put this question out now on Instagram as an Instagram story. Well, we'll pose the question to you. From all the race expos you've been to, all the times you've dipped into Ironman Village, what is your favorite purchase you've ever made at the races? Can't wait to hear what you, our audience, has to say.
on to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Tridot Pool School is the best way for triathletes to learn proper swim form. And it is now the official swim program of Ironman. The Tridot coaching team spent years on the pool deck crafting functional freestyle, and it has already helped hundreds of triathletes improve their swim by an average of 12%. As soon as an athlete registers for Tridot Pool School, they are given a series of dry land exercises to help build crucial muscle memory long before the in-person weekend. The weekend workshop is an engaging blend of instruction, demonstrations, and drills with frequent breaks to rest and reflect. You'll be grouped with swimmers of a similar ability and taught step-by-step how to turn your muscle memory into full-stroke swimming that's smooth and fast. Tridot Pool School is for everyone. We have had entry-level triathletes, back-of-the-packers, mid-packers, some elite age groupers, and even a few pro triathletes in attendance. Ready to jump in? There are pool schools available all over the country and around the world. Head to tridot.com/pool-school and sign up today. As endurance athletes, we're going to race. Some of us a few times a year, some of us too many times a year, but we're all suckers for signing up for events. So while we're at it, why not use that racing to help a good cause? With a little forethought and a little planning, you can raise money and or awareness towards a good cause. And Audra and Tammy are here to help us do just that. So Audra, Tammy, I kind of want to go back in time and hear about the first time you decided to do this, right? Because there had to be a first time for both the positions you're both in. What was the cause you were supporting and what kind of gave you the idea to fundraise through your racing in the first place? Tammy.
Wow. It is so funny how life just kind of circles back and you do things or you find yourself in places that you don't even really expect to. And so my first time was actually in 2006. I had just gone through a significant emotional event and needed something to occupy my time and kind of divert it from the emotional event.
Sure.
And yeah. So I came home one day in my mailbox, a lot of junk mail, but there was a flyer that said, "Do you love to travel? Would you like to go to Hawaii? Would you like to make friends? Would you like to meet new people? Would you like to
yes.
do something
yes.
that will
yes.
impact somebody else's life in a positive way?" And I was just like, "Oh yeah." And they said, "Okay, come to this information session." And it was in St. Louis. I lived in Illinois at the time. And it was in St. Louis on a weeknight. But I was like, you know what? It intrigued my curiosity enough that I decided to go. And so I went to the interest meeting, and it was about running a marathon as part of the American Stroke Association Train to End Stroke. And at that time, I barely could run a 10K. And so when you're talking about running a marathon, I was
a little
like,
bit of a jump.
That is insane. I was like, who does that? Like, it just didn't make any kind of rational sense to me. But again, they got me with the sales. I was the guy was very persuasive, and I ended up signing up. Now, lo and behold, that marathon that I did was Kona.
Oh, wow.
And I never, at the time, I didn't know anything about triathlon. I didn't know anything about that was the world championship, like nothing. I didn't know anything. That entire process of, you know, they essentially gave us everything. They took us to get us measured, our foot measured. They gave us the tools that we needed to be able to fundraise. It was the camaraderie and the team building and the bond with the other people that were doing this. They had everybody from people that had been running for a long time to those of us that this was our first marathon. And everybody like welcomed, it was very welcoming, but the biggest thing, and I still have my jersey.
So cool.
That we have. Oh. I still have my jersey. But what was the most significant about this was that as I was doing the fundraising process, we didn't have social media. We didn't have a lot of the stuff that we have now. It was hardcore. They taught us how to write a letter. tell people what we were doing and ask them to sponsor or donate. And I literally did like 500 letters, printed them all out, and we just went through the phone book and mailed them to like everybody. But what happened in doing that is the responses that I got back from people that I didn't even know. And people started sharing their stories about family members that had been affected by stroke, people that had died, people that had stroke but were recovering but were paralyzed. And so I started writing everybody's name on the back of my jersey, and I decided to run in memory of or in honor of those individuals. And I will tell you, when you run for something bigger than yourself, the times that it got hard, the times that I wanted to quit, the times when that lava heat felt like it was right on my, right on my legs and searing it, I think about the people that I'm doing it for. And that gave me the push to really continue to get through it and finish.
Yeah, and very cool of you to show us that jersey. And for those who are listening to this, you know, as you're driving in the car or something, you know, Tammy's holding up for Audra and I the jersey that she wore during that race. You know, what a cool token that you still have of your first marathon. When you say it was in Kona, what was it? Kona Ironman World Championship Day with all the triathletes out there?
No, it was the same.
Kona course, different day.
It was the same course. It was just the Kona Marathon. That's all it was called. But it was the run course of the World Triathlon or the World Championships at the time. It meant nothing to me because I had no idea, clue what Ironman was, what triathlon was, or anything like that.
Yeah, you were running on holy ground and didn't even know it quite yet. But that's so cool. Now, Audra, I guess I'm making an assumption in your seat as the executive director for the Ironman Foundation that you've done this before. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't, but have you? And if you have, do you recall your first time you ever raised money for a cause through a race?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So very similar to Tammy, I had a life-changing event. It was back in 2003, and I made a choice to run a half marathon for the local Humane Society. So okay. I, you know, didn't know anything about fundraising, but knew that I am very passionate about animals and I wanted to be able to give back. So very similar to Tammy, they trained us up on how to like write the letter and then we would print them out. And the same thing, I would give them to my family and friends and just talk about how, you know, the animal abuse and let's help and fostering and all of that. And I was able to raise a significant amount of money. So back then, like I always knew that I wanted to give back somehow, but didn't know what that meant. So, you know, working with the Humane Society, that kind of, you know, kicked off my career with Ironman. And then here I am with being the executive director for the Ironman Foundation.
Yeah. And so you started with Ironman in 2009. You didn't start in this current role. You worked your way through a couple of different roles. You were a race director for a little bit. You oversaw a region for Ironman for a little bit. And now you're in this role with Ironman Foundation. You know, what was that journey like? And I suppose where you're at now is kind of the dream job, right?
Yeah, no, I feel very, very fortunate. So I started, I moved to the state of New Hampshire from Connecticut. And I was like, well, what am I going to do? Like, here I am in a very rural area. So I hooked up with a local race director. His name is Keith Jordan from Endorphin Sports. So I started working with him. And, you know, he created Timberman Triathlon, all these half iron events is what they were called at the time. Then we became one of the first licensees for Ironman. And then just gradually Ironman purchased the events. And then I, you know, was very lucky to just start a career with Ironman. And that was, as you said, just race directing first. I race directed 4 events and then moved into operations, then was an operations director, then became a regional director. And then, so I've been with Ironman almost 15 years, and then COVID came and I was laid off. And then my boss, Shane Facto, reached out to me and he's like, I need you to, you know, to take over the Ironman Foundation. And I was like, I have no nonprofit skills. Like the only, I know how I volunteer at the Humane Society. I can walk the dogs. And he's like, well, you know how to get things done. So it's been such an incredible journey. So fast forward, I believe I'm going into my fourth year with the foundation, and it's been amazing. I've met so many wonderful people and just continue to grow our give back and just, and educate people on racing for more, that definitely there's a bigger reason to race, and why not race for Ironman Foundation. Selfishly, I want all of you to race for Ironman Foundation. So.
Yeah. And I've actually wanted to do this episode for a long time. I have a cousin that lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area nearby me, and he's a big trail runner, and he races for an organization called Venture, where every race he does, the funds are going to some cause through this Venture Racing organization. And so it's been on my radar. I wanted to talk about it. And Tammy and I had a great conversation a couple of years ago in St. George Ambassador Camp, just about some of the races that she's done raising money for different causes. And so when we partnered with Ironman, I was like, you know what, let's get Ironman Foundation on the show. Let's get Tammy on the show and let's talk about this. So I'm very excited for this one. And Tammy, I know, I think every time I fire up Facebook, there you are with a race day picture from doing some different race for some different cause. You're very passionate about doing this. Can you just kind of tell us what are some of the races you've raced while fundraising, and what are some of the different causes that you've supported?
It started with the Trained in Stroke, but then I've also done races for IMAS, or Massachusetts Eye and Ear, as well as the Action Against Exploited Children, ACE, and oh my goodness, so many others in between. Yeah. Like those were the large ones. But do you remember, now I might be telling my age by saying this, but do you all remember, back when I was young and was going to school, we used to have bowl-a-thons, where we had to go out and we had to get sponsors to to sponsor a penny a pin, or dollar a pin, depending on how bad or good you were for bowling. And it was the same way with walkathons. We started having these walkathons where you had to go out and ask people to sponsor, a certain amount of money per mile or per 100 meters or whatever it was. And so I started in my young ages doing this kind of fundraising. And what I've realized is that it's okay to go out there and do something for you. But when you're doing it for somebody else, it gives an entirely whole new meaning to it. It's like a whole different ballgame and a whole different feeling. And so what I try to do is I make sure that whatever it is I'm partnering with, that I have a personal connection to it. So either, brain research. That was another one that I did. And that one was very special to me. I actually reached out to the organizer personally and shared my story with her. And I said, I would love to be able to be a part of your team. And here's why. My oldest daughter ended up having to get a brain tumor removed. She had to do emergency surgery and get a brain tumor removed. And then I subsequently, I suffer from multiple cavernomas, which are little lesions in the brain. And I had one bleed out. And so it produces stroke symptoms. And I ended up having to get a craniotomy and have it removed. But after that was in 2020, right before COVID, because I got out of the hospital right before they shut everything down. I was subsequently able to train. Big shout out to TriDot, utilizing TriDot after my brain surgery, and completed my very first Ironman.
Yeah.
So I try to make sure that whatever it is that I'm doing, that I have a personal connection to it.
Yeah, no, very, very cool. And we, I remember, I think I was on site at the first race when you completed a 70.3. And so we were all cheering for Tammy from afar when she was going for that first Ironman, and very thrilled to see you accomplish it, especially knowing, because you're very open on Facebook, as we're Facebook friends, and you're very open with kind of what you're dealing with and what you're going through. And for you to accomplish that, right, and finish that dream with some of the health stuff that you had going on is just so huge. And, thrilled to have you here talking about fundraising. So a great resource, and we'll talk a little bit about kind of how to do this. Now that we've gotten both of your personal backstories and some of your experience, we're going to learn how to raise money through our races. And honestly, if you are racing an Ironman event, whether it's an Ironman 70.3 or it's a full distance a race, I mean, they're the perfect way to do this is the Ironman Foundation. And that's why Audra is on the episode. So to date, Audra, the Ironman Foundation has raised over $55 million for charitable causes. I'm going to say that number again, $55 million for charitable causes through the Ironman Foundation. Audra, just laid out for us, how does racing through the Ironman Foundation work for the athlete?
Sure. No, absolutely. And after, at the end of this year, we'll be at $60 million, giving back to over 10,000 nonprofit organizations.
Amazing.
So, we're really proud of that. So, so we have slots for all the North America events, including the World Championship events. So there's two ways to raise for the foundation. You can be Team IMF, where you either pick a full distance or a 70.3, and you have a fundraising commitment for that. For the full distance, it's $3,700. For the 70.3, it's $1,850. And there's so many benefits that come with that. So outside of getting a low bib number, so you're racked right near the pros, if there's pros at that particular race.
Nice, good.
VIP passes, Ironman Foundation swag. You get to talk to myself and my team. So there's so many benefits there. We have a great community where you have access to our Facebook pages. We host webinars. We have so many ambassadors. And then there's also something called Community Fund. And that's where you pay an elevated race entry fee. And 50% of that comes back to the Ironman Foundation. And that's tax. And it's tax deductible on that, and also Team IMF. So that's a big, big bonus. And with that, the benefits are a little bit limited, but so there are two ways to raise with the foundation. And also we never, turn away any donations. If anybody just wants to give a donation to the foundation, that's always welcome too.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Helps add up to that 55 and then 60 going on 60 million for sure, I imagine. And just doing a little research for this episode, I was familiar with Ironman Foundation. I've seen the kits on course before. And just as a fan, when you're at the races and someone goes by in an Ironman Foundation kit, you just kind of cheer for them a little harder. You just do. You kind of recognize they're out there doing something, doing some good in the world. But I didn't realize, Audra, how much Ironman Foundation gives outside of just the monetary amount to causes. There's there's the Bike for Kids campaign. There's the Swim Lesson campaign. Several races have service projects going on in conjunction with the race. So just kind of tell us about some of these other opportunities to get involved outside of specifically using your race to raise funds.
Absolutely. So we host about anywhere from 10 to 13 service projects. The team was just in Oceanside. We did a swim clinic there. We partnered with CAF. So, and we gave a $10,000 donation to for the kids so they can have swim lessons. So each swim lesson costed $12.57. So in 2022, we were able to give back over 3,000 swim lessons. So definitely I would say go onto our website and it lists where all the service projects are. And, you know, we would always welcome all the volunteers. Outside of that, we build bikes. We're doing a big bike build back in Lake Placid this year. So we're going to build about 100 bikes. And we're also doing, we have some former pros or retired pros that are doing some relay teams in Lake Placid. So, which is going to be Andy Potts, Ben Hoffman. We have Rennie, Sika Henry, Heather Jackson. And then we auctioned off one leg of each of the relay teams. So that's another way of getting involved with the foundation. And back, you know, and a lot of people don't know this, but back during COVID, the foundation gave back $1 million towards the Kona community to help feed the community. Because as we know, Kona, it's a tourism area. And with COVID, everything was shut down. So we were able to help out along those lines. So we've given back to many, many different types of campaigns. And, you know, definitely, again, like check out our website and it will list everything.
Yeah,
Audra, I know one thing. I know one thing that's near and dear to my heart with the Ironman Foundation is the Race for Change.
Yes.
That is I haven't been able to be a participant because I'm already I've already completed one, but I think that is an amazing program to be able to get more exposure and to get more diversity and to out to people that may not necessarily, that may have barriers that are stopping them from doing the sport of triathlon, and giving them the opportunity to be able to be part of the sport. So that one is very near and dear to my heart.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So for our Race for Change campaign, so we're giving back $1 million and we're in like phase three of it. The first two phases where we did, you know, again, always with the same theme of helping kids and swim lessons and giving away bikes. But we're also, what we're doing is breaking down those barriers, increasing diversity in the world of triathlon. So this year we put out scholarships and we chose three athletes that are going to race together as a relay team. And then they're going to do their own individual 70.3 and we'll provide all the gear and everything for it. So it's been an amazing program. Sika Henry has been a huge supporter. She's one of our ambassadors, Morgan Lattimore, Marcus Fitz. So it's been great. So it definitely, I learned a lot and I'm looking forward to continuing the program. So thank you so much for mentioning that.
Yeah, Tammy, I think the first time I met you in person was at Clash Daytona several years ago. It might have been Challenge Daytona at the time even. And we were chatting after the race and you made a comment about how there's not a lot of people like you out at the races. And for folks who are only hearing our voices, Tammy, you are an African-American athlete, correct? I feel like just anecdotally, I feel like I've seen that trending upwards in the last couple of years in a way that is really positive. I feel like I've seen more tri clubs specifically for people from different racial backgrounds. To me is really cool. So Tammy, yes, please. Thank you. Please. And thank you for bringing up that portion of Ironman Foundation as well. So, now, Tammy, one thing I want you to talk about is obviously as triathletes, a lot of us listening to this podcast are doing Ironman events. And so it makes sense to go through the Ironman Foundation. You've done this, at all sorts of different races. Your very first one was a marathon. That wasn't an Ironman event. I believe you fundraised through the Boston Marathon. Is that correct?
I did.
I think Boston is one you've done as a fundraiser. So I know you've done a variety of different types of races. So Audra was able to speak specifically to how to get involved with Ironman Foundation, which is just go to ironmanfoundation.org. Go there and we'll put that in the show notes for today. And you can start learning all the information about how to get how to race through Ironman Foundation. Tammy, how does your process work when you're doing a non-Ironman event? I know in some cases you've referenced you go out and find the cause, you go out and touch base with the cause, you find the race. Some races probably have infrastructure for this like Ironman does. Just kind of tell us from all the different other options out there how this usually works for you.
It really became pertinent when I was doing my 6-star journey with the World Marathon Majors. So we all know that it's very, very, very hard to get into Boston. Yeah. And you don't qualify. The only other route, if you don't do it with a tour group, is to fundraise. And I believe Boston has the highest fundraising amount that was out there the year I did it. It was astronomical. It's the most I've ever raised. And so there's a list of charities. And most of the time, it boils down to what charity will take you because it is still a selective and a competitive process. And so for me, I've always promised myself that it would have to be something that I had a connection to in some way, shape, or form. And so I looked through the list of charities that are available and the ones that still have availability with them. And then you reach out and you apply, essentially. You apply. A lot of times you have to write an essay. I've had interviews. It is a very selective process from what I've seen. And you have to lay out to them your fundraising plan. They want to know that you have the capability to be able to raise the funds. And so I've had to lay out a very detailed plan on this is what I plan to do in order Wow. to raise the funds.
Wow. Oh, very, very interesting. I didn't know that was part of it for sure. And are there races, and Audra, you might know this as well, are there races where I imagine an athlete could just, hey, I signed up for my local 10K. I want to use my local 10K to raise funds for this food pantry down the street that I've heard of. Like what would the process look like for an athlete just going totally grassroots, totally non-official, totally like non-big race? Audra, I'll let you go first and then maybe Tammy on this one. What might that process look like for an athlete who from start to finish has to take care of the financials and has to take care of the planning and has to touch base with probably both the race and the organization and raise money through proper channels and make sure it all gets donated just fine so you don't get audited or whatever. What would that look like at just a local level, Audra?
At a local level, really what a lot of people do, they first reach out to their friends and family. And when when that's all tapped out, because many times we go back to what we're doing, I've seen people get, incredibly creative from having t-shirts printed up and setting up their own internet store where individuals can purchase these t-shirts and, 75% of the proceeds go to the fundraising campaign. Then also they'll work with a lot of local restaurants and they'll have Uno's Pizzeria. And on that day, 20% of those proceeds will go back to your campaign. I've seen everything from golf tournaments doing that. I've seen people do tag sales for their fundraising commitment. And so it's just really getting going grassroots and just keeping an open mind. There's no off limits. People can get incredibly creative. I've actually seen athlete paint ornaments for Christmas, and that was, a donation. Wow. Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways. Yeah.
And so at that point, you're just collecting the money yourself through any of those means necessary. And then at the end, just donating it all to the cause exactly. that you're representing.
So if they don't have a specific platform where you can actually send donors to, so if you set up a campaign on a platform, but a lot of grassroots, they don't have that. So that's where the money will come to the athlete and the athlete will write the check and send it over to the organization.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I totally blanked on this until literally just right now in this moment having this conversation, but my wife is not an endurance athlete. She does Beachbody workouts. So she gets in front of the TV and subscribes to the Beachbody. I think it's just called Body now. It's not called Beachbody anymore. desiring a Beachbody isn't politically correct. And that's okay. So she fires up Body and she does a couple different workout programs that she likes. And that's, so she likes staying fit, but she is not interested in running, swimming, biking, endurance sports. But she did a 10K. Through an organization, one of her high school friends was raising money towards mental health. And so my wife jumped into this 10K and she started running around the neighborhood and getting ready for it. And I paced her through her virtual 10K. And, we had an amount that we had to donate for her to take part in the 10K. And yeah, I think we got a thank you card. I think we got a t-shirt for being a part of it. And it was kind of the race itself, essentially the race coordinator was collecting all the funds and then donating them in that particular case. But totally forgot about that until right now having this conversation. But that was an interesting one as well.
There's other opportunities nowadays that makes it so easy with Facebook and social media, being able to actually do fundraising. Because a lot of people, if you notice, like during their birthday, they'll say, I'm doing a fundraiser. And so fire up a Facebook campaign or an Instagram campaign to raise money for whatever cause it is that you want to do, and then do the event that you're going to do and then have people donate to that through the social media channels.
Yeah. And so I will say this, because I believe it or not, and people who listen to the podcast don't believe this, but it's true. I am definitely an introvert. I do not like feeling like I'm imposing on other people. So I would make a horrible salesman. I respect people that have sales skills, because that is not me. I will not push something on somebody. I abhor the idea of approaching somebody and asking for a donation or money or whatever. It's just not my personality. And so people who are gifted at that, and there are people who are gifted at that. Like, I admire that skill set. So help us out. I'm sure there's some athletes like me. I'm sure there's some athletes who are extroverts and don't mind doing it, but need a point in the right direction. What are some strategies and some different methodologies to kind of actually going out and making the ask and asking people to donate towards your cause? Tammy?
Yeah. So Andrew, can I tell you, I don't like it either.
Okay.
I absolutely do not like asking people to donate. And so what I've had to do is actually change that mind. It was a mindset shift where I'm not asking them to give me money. They're not giving me money, but I'm asking them to support a cause. And so when you look at it from the different perspective, it's them supporting a cause. And most of the time, people will support the cause because they see the passion that you have for it and they want to support you. So that's how that ends up working. So then it's like, that's why I want to make sure that it's something I'm personally attached to and that I have a passion for, because then that passion is what shows and people want to support people that are supporting their passion. So that was one of the things that I had to kind of do a mindset shift and change from the thinking of I'm not selling something to somebody. I'm not, I might be bothering people because, I do have to come and keep asking you.
And the people that are probably bothered by that ask are Scrooges anyway, right? Like, I mean, if I get that from, I will get a couple athletes per year that hit me up, and the Harley household has a certain budget, so I'll help who I can. But after I've helped who I can, it's hey, so sorry, but I never mind. I'm never bothered by it. It's just kind of like, hey, I can't right now, sorry. So that's kind of the worst, right? Is the people who are genuinely bothered by it? Just cut them out of your circles anyway, right, Tammy?
So I realized that the personal, when you talk about strategies, just posting it on social media is not like nothing. You literally have to make the personal ask. And when I've reached out and when I have personally asked somebody, that's when it's made a difference. And yes, everybody understands that. Same with me. I have a limit. I've worked it into my budget, but I have a specific amount per month that I can give to fundraisers and charities. And once it's gone, it's gone. But if I can just say anything to the airwaves and whoever's listening, please, 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 please do not just ghost somebody. I think that is the hardest thing to deal with, is when you ask somebody and you can clearly see that they've read it if you sent a message. But to have no response whatsoever is very, people can take it personally rather than just saying, I would love to support, but I can't right now. Or I would love to support, however, I have other priorities or something. Then just don't, instead of just leaving somebody, leaving them on read or, ghosting them.
Yeah. And that's a great perspective right there as well. Kind of the other side of it when you are the one who's asked. And Audra, for Ironman Foundation, I know you referenced that you guys like to arm your athletes with tools and with resources to kind of help them learn how to do this. So what do you tell athletes when it comes to actually making that ask and raising the funds?
One thing that I've noticed, outside, so we have a whole toolkit that will help guide you. And then we host webinars and give tips and tricks. But it really comes down to when you're talking to that individual about donating, it's about showing how passionate you are for the cause. And that really makes a huge difference, because you have to remember these individuals are getting hit up by everybody. Like we all, and it's just really being true to yourself and just expressing why this is so important to you. And 9 out of 10 times that works. I've never seen anybody fail racing for the foundation. Obviously there's, if there's job losses and things like that, but it's just really talking about what you truly believe in.
I also let them know what the money that they're donating is being utilized for. So a lot of mine that I race for are for health causes and cancer, lupus, MS, stroke, heart disease, Sjogren's, autoimmune disorders, all of those things are things that I'm personally tied to and have a passion for. And I let people know there's no cure for these things. How many times do you have somebody or do you know somebody that's been affected by Alzheimer's? Don't you wish that they could find a cure for Alzheimer's or you know, a way to be able to handle, you know, individuals affected with it. And so I, you know, I let them know this is what the money is going towards. It's going towards research. It's going to towards quality of life for patients. It's going to whatever that organization deems that they're donating, you know, the charity money goes towards. I let people know that and make it personal, tie it to, you know, something that they can see themselves being a part of.
And a lot of times what I've also, what I've noticed too, if you go back to just being very old school, I'm showing my age, is where you actually print something off and you come with a packet where it's an actual visual instead of something that's digital, because we're on our computers, our phones all the time. But if you just take a step back and here you go, I printed this off and it, you know, and talk them through it. So then it's like, oh, okay. So there's a little bit more of an emotional attachment because you actually went the extra step by making the effort of, you know, using your printer or bringing it to a printer to get, you know, to get set up. So.
Yeah. You might, Audra, in about 20 years have to update the presentation deck to teach people how to pitch to Gen Z, you know, to make a TikTok pitching your cause.
Gotta be a TikTok.
And instead of actual printed brochures, but that's a problem for a few decades from now. That's for sure. Now I am curious about this for athletes who are fully on board. They're very interested in doing this. And again, through Ironman Foundation, you can just race for Team Ironman Foundation and the money goes, towards a variety of causes that Ironman Foundation gives to, but through Ironman, you can race for a cause that you choose. And obviously if you're doing what Tammy's talking about and you're doing a grassroots race or a one-off race or something, for somebody who wants to go out and find maybe a local cause to donate to. What advice do you guys have for making sure the organization or the cause you're raising funds for is a quality one? Is somebody where the funds are actually going to help people and instead of pay some bills? You know, there's some of that behind the scenes in nonprofits, but what advice do you have to actually finding a qualified organization that's doing good in the world where your money will go to your efforts will go to good use, if you know what I mean? Audra, do you have any advice?
Yeah.
There?
So the first thing I would say is definitely, you know, do your research, do a Google search, but there's also something called GuideStar. And if you go on there, it rates the nonprofits of, you know, where they fall, if they, you know, if they're legitimate, and the higher the rating is, then you know that you're in good hands there.
No, very good. Tammy, anything to add there, or does that cover it?
I mean, yeah, do your research. We do a lot of referrals. We go by referrals, people that have raced for other charities and had a good or bad experience within the community. We'll say, hey, this is a really good one. You should check this one out. But a lot of the times, you know, you have your big ones that are out there all the time. You know, there's team, I don't know if they still do it, but Team and Training used to be really good, really big.
Yep.
Okay. And I know Leukemia, so I'm not sure. So the Leukemia one has one. There's a lot. And then Ronald McDonald. And then we all know St. Jude. You know, so you have your large ones that have a presence at pretty much all the places. What I do is I tell people, though, look at that overhead. Check to see how much money is going to the cause versus how much is going to overhead. And when I was in the military, we had what's called the Combined Federal Campaign every year. And there was a book of all the charities that you could donate to. And it told you right there how much, you know, how much their overhead was and things like that. So I still have my CFC campaign booklet. And so I always will look in there and say, oh, I want to look into this charity, and then go to their website and then do the research and things like that.
Yeah. So their overhead should be 30% and under. So that's okay. Like the rule of thumb for a nonprofit. So
no, very helpful. Yeah. I would have had no idea, right, when I saw that number. I'd be like, oh, is this good or bad? So that's why we had this podcast for today. Two more questions. I want to hear about this one. When it's all said and done, you get through your race, you get the medal, you take a picture, you post it to Instagram, you know, yay for me, I did my race. Is there anything on the back end of the race that we should do? Obviously, there's actually the transferring of the funds to the organization, but should we do any follow-up communication with the organization? Should we do anything to thank our supporters, perhaps? What should we consider on the backside of the event itself? Tammy?
So definitely thank your supporters. Now, I'm going to be the biggest hypocrite right now when I say this, because after all of my races, I actually made a personalized card with pictures of me from the race and things like that, to thank each of my supporters. And unfortunately never sent the cards out. So that's the that's the hypocritical part of me. But definitely you want to thank your supporters. And a nice handwritten thank you card goes a long way.
Yeah. And that for the record, Tammy, that's my kind of energy right there, is having the good intention and just not quite seeing it through the mailbox. That I'm with you. Audrey, anything to add there on how you coach your athletes to interact with their supporters on the backside?
Yeah, same as Tammy, just, you know, thanking all your donors. But the other thing is also the person that you're working with the nonprofit, through the nonprofit, is asking for photos of, you know, let's just say if it was swim lessons for kids, if they can send over some, you know, pictures of the kids that were in the, you know, the swim lessons and or things along those lines. Just any kind of documentation, because that also, whenever you see a visual, it makes you feel good that you know your money is going towards what you believe in.
Yeah, no, absolutely does. We will land the plane on this conversation with this one today. I hope our folks have heard this and feel definitely educated on how to go to ironmanfoundation.org and get plugged in with Audra and her team, and and definitely go become friends with Tammy on Facebook so you can see whatever cause she's supporting on her next race. But as folks are thinking about doing this, I'm kind of curious. This does add to your workload, your prep load heading into a race. You know, we're already thinking through the training. We're already, you know, thinking about our nutrition. We're already thinking about what running shoes we're going to run in, and there's all these logistics and what hotel we're booking, and there's already a lot to a big race weekend. And so this does add one more thing you have to navigate, one more thing you have to focus on. That there is a toll and that is there. Tell us, just as athletes, what's the payoff here? Like, what does it do for you, the athlete, when you're out on the race course? Like does it do anything to heighten our experience? And I'll go Audra here and then Tammy. So Audra, what would you say on what this does for you, the athlete?
No, absolutely. Knowing that you're out there is, you know, and there's going to be times during the race where it gets hard, where you're having these conversations in your head of like, why am I doing this? Like, this hurts. And you go back to the reason why I'm doing this is because I'm racing for, you know, this cause. And, you know, I've seen people as far as like what Tammy did, she write the names on their kit or down their hands, their arms. And you look back and you're like, oh, mile 10 is for Johnny, or mile 11 is for this. So it's knowing that you're doing something bigger than actually racing, which is hard, but you're doing more. You're racing for more.
I love it. Tammy, what would you say here to somebody thinking about doing this on what it adds to your experience?
So a couple things. If you are with a good charity, a lot of the things that you mentioned, they help out quite a bit with. So they help out with where you're going to stay as a hotel.
Oh, awesome.
Depending on, again, the character of the charity and how much they put into it, supporting those that are supporting them. You know, they can have room blocks at certain hotels so that everybody's staying together. They have a welcome reception where you get to meet everybody, and you get to meet like the president of the nonprofit, or, you know, things like that. A lot of the times they have a section along the route, what they call the cheer section, where everybody can go, your family members can go. So they have a dedicated place for them to go to. A lot of times there'll be a VIP, you know, a tent set up afterwards. And so they do provide a lot of support to try to help out during the race day. But when it's all said and done, it's always better to give than to receive. And when you do something that's bigger than you, I always think about the people that can't do it. I have several friends that are suffering from MS and wish that they could run and wish that they could swim and wish that they could bike. There's people that have been injured on active duty that, you know, their life is just not the same. And so I always think about those that are not here, those that are here but can't, and the fact that I still have the ability, despite everything that might be going on, I still have the ability to give of myself in this capacity for somebody else.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Hey, everyone. It's cool down time, and I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. Today, imparting us with the coach cooldown tip is Jen Reinhardt. Jen is a full-time triathlon coach and coaches master swimming at a local fitness center. Jen started swimming at the age of 4 and swam for Purdue University for several years in college. Triathlon came into her life in 1984, and since then she has completed a whopping 29 Ironmans and recently locked in her ticket to race in Kona for the 8th time. Jen is certified through USA Cycling, US Master Swimming. Jen is a USAT Level 2 Endurance Coach. She is certified through Ironman U and is a TriDot Founding Masters Coach. Jen has coached all levels of athletes from beginners to elite age groupers and loves working with people who are new to the sport all the way through to those racing Ironman distances. Welcome to the cool down, Jen.
Thanks, Vanessa. It's so great to be here today. I can't wait to see what you have to ask me.
All right. Well, before you were a full-time triathlon coach, you worked as a chemical engineer and you were awarded 3 patents for manufacturing nuclear fuel. So tell me about the one that was your favorite to design and create.
Actually, that would be the one before I got the patents on the nuclear fuel. What took me to that was my job prior. And it was up in upstate New York. And I was on a startup team where it was just exciting because you get picked to be on the startup team means you're special and means you're special enough that you get to work like from 10 p.m. at night till 10 a.m. in the morning.
That sounds really special.
But it was for a 23-year-old, I think I had worked as an engineer for maybe a year and I got picked to be on the startup team, which means I got to do all kinds of neat things like take special courses on the state of the art control systems that were back then, which in 1983 or so, it was a lot different than it is now. But that led into my other job where I got the patents with manufacturing of nuclear fuel, which led into all of my jobs kind of just strung together from those experiences. It was great.
I'm really, really honored to be here with you today. And I'm actually guessing that the team aspect of designing those products to help you during that patent process, it kind of coincides with what we're going to talk about with the tip today, which is related to building a team. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about building a triathlon team.
Well, you're right. Those experiences as a young engineer really carry on into my adult life and my passion for coaching. When you're working with a good team, things go smoother, everyone grows, and it's a much more impactful participation for everyone involved. With triathlon, part of what I've been through as a coach, and then there's part of what I've been through as an athlete, we all have kind of things that come that knock us back and we have to pick ourselves up again and figure out how to move on. I've had a couple, as an athlete, devastating injuries that required me to find a good team of orthopedic surgeons, physical therapists, massage therapists, because I wasn't ready to give up my passion of triathlon. But past that individual aspect of it, I think most of us are doing triathlon. There's always that reason for, you know, good health. You hear that a lot. But the camaraderie that we have with other athletes, it's an individual sport, but it's such a team sport. I think TriDot has really made that grow so much in the last few years with the ambassadors, with I Am Tridot. At the races, there's just so much more enthusiasm, meeting new teammates that you haven't met before, going to ambassador camp. All those are very special situations that just, I think, motivate all of us to continue in the sport. Each year, it's like, well, what race am I going to do? And it's like, well, who wants to do what race? I would rather go with six of my teammates, even if they're not teammates here in Austin, six of my Tridot teammates, than to go by myself. So there's that feeling of, you know, building your team, you know, having a good coach if you're very goal-oriented is sometimes one of the best things to do to help build your team around you as an individual. I've had lots of good coaches in my history of triathlon that have really helped me grow, but also made the sport be that much more important to me. But it comes down to race day. I hate race day. I hate getting up in the morning. I am not an early morning person, but once I'm up, the excitement of seeing all of my friends, getting to the finish line so that I can enjoy the accomplishment that we all just have happen. That's what brings me back day in, day out, is being at the finish line, hanging out with all of my Tridot friends and all of my friends that aren't Tridots too. But it's just that community of like-minded people that keep me coming back to the sport, keep me building my team. You know, it used to be you had a few athletes that lived in the town where you were and you were teammates, but now we have teammates across the globe, and it's just such a wonderful thing.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the Tridot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to Tridot.com and start your free trial today. Tridot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.